Hello and welcome to the Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending Friday, January the 24th, 2025. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm Noel Thorpe Tracy, standing in for Keith Vincent. The week's headlines are: new hospital plan suffers more delay, residents could be hit with a 15% tax increase, urgent improvement ordered at prison. So, could we have the first headline, please, Nikki?
Which was: new hospital plan suffers more delays. The construction of a new Hampshire hospital will not begin until at least 2037, it has been announced. The plan's now costed at up to £2 billion. To build it next to the M3 near Basingstoke, which would lead to the downgrading of Winchester's A&E department, are in the third wave of hospital renovations, meaning they will be amongst the last in the country to be completed. The start date could be as late as 2039, much later than the previous start date under the Conservative government of 2032. Speaking in Parliament on Monday, Winchester MP Danny Chambers highlighted the importance of managing the current available services properly. He said in Hampshire and around the rest of the country in 2019 and 2024, Conservative MPs stood on the promise of delivering new hospitals, including one for Hampshire, and it turned out there was never any funding and it was just false promises to try and get votes. And I fought tirelessly to save and improve Winchester's A&E and the consultant-led maternity. Now, with the announcement that the construction of a proposed new hospital in Hampshire won't even be started until between 2037 and 2039, we absolutely need to ensure that the current services are invested and improved so that they remain fit for purpose. Now, Madam Deputy Speaker, given that the hospital programme was delayed, this means it is more urgent than ever to increase capacity by fixing social care, so that those who are well enough to leave hospital can be cared for in the community, thus freeing up beds immediately. We cannot endure both insufficient social care packages and crumbling hospitals. Replying, the Secretary of State for Health, Wes Streeting, said, I know patients in some parts of the country will be disappointed by this new timetable. Excuse me. They are right to be. They were led up the garden path by three Conservative Prime Ministers, all promising hospitals with no credible plan for funding to deliver them, and Conservative MPs who stood on a manifesto promise they knew could never be kept. The leader of Winchester City Council, Martin Todd, said, "It has been a huge priority for the City Council to support and enable extra investment in our local NHS, such as the new orthopaedic outpatients department, which was topped out just before Christmas, and the new St Clement surgery. Now that it's clear that it will be at least 12 years before there's any kind of new hospital, this has to remain our priority. However, no amount of hospital investment can cover for the crisis in social care. Alongside any investment plans, we also need the county and the government to crack on and sort this out." Martin Pittman, the maternity consultant obstetrician who was sacked by the Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust after blowing the whistle on patient and staff safety at Winchester Hospital, also expressed his consternation. On Twitter, he wrote, "Utterly and totally predictable, as I stated at the numerous public listening events that I intended during the supposed consultation phase of this white elephant project. The funding for this new build was never there, despite the protestations of Messrs. Brine and Drummond." The Chronicle has also approached Councillor Caroline Horrell, leader of the Conservative group on the City Council, and Nick Adams-King, leader of the County Council, for comment.
Thank you. Next, please, Norma.
Resident could be hit by with 15% tax increase. Cash-strapped Hampshire County Council could slap its residents with a huge 15% council tax increase if the government agrees to its plans. With a £182 million deficit, cuts in all service areas and the use of reserves to fill gaps, Councillor Leader, Councillor Nick Adams-King, said that the authority had submitted a request for exceptional financial support, EFS, to the government for 2025-26. EFS is a form of temporary financial assistance provided by the UK government to local authorities that are facing severe financial difficulties, with Southampton City Council already getting help in this way. The County Council's EFS request is to raise council tax by 10% more than the usual maximum. It would mean that any increase could be as much as 15%, while a rise of more than 5% would usually trigger a referendum. It can be rolled out without one of the councils, if one of the councils has government permission. Hampshire has the second lowest council tax level of all counties nationally, having previously frozen it for 5 years between 2011 and 12, and in 2015 and 16. Since then, it has increased council tax by the referendum limit every year since 2016-17. The 15% rise in council tax in 2020-26 would be worth around £84 million, the council said. In a letter to county councillors, the authority's chief executive, Carolyn Williamson, said that the EFS request is a proactive, preemptive step by the council to secure greater resilience. She said that the EFS comes alongside the council's intentions to return to our core purpose by delivering legal minimum service levels, ongoing spending controls, and enlisting an independent panel of experts last year to challenge and support us. She added, "They too have reached the same conclusions we have, that despite being a well-run, high-performing council that manages its resources with the utmost care and precision, we can no longer make enough savings and still deliver our statutory responsibilities." In the letter, she said that the council did have enough reserves to plug the 2025-26 budget gap, but by 2026-27, the prospect of a Section 114 notice effectively declaring bankruptcy becomes a real possibility if there are no deep-seated changes to the way local government is funded. Councillor Adams-King said that despite trying to engage with the government about the council's financial situation and asking for a meeting to discuss a positive way forward, he had been ignored.
Thank you. And now, Andrew, please.
Urgent improvement is ordered at prison. An inspector has called for more support and investment to halt the serious decline in safety and security at Winchester Prison. During an inspection in October, Charlie Taylor found such concerning conditions at the jail that he issued an urgent notification for improvement to the Secretary of State. Violence had increased since the last inspection. Serious assaults against staff were the highest and serious assaults against prisoners the second highest of all reception jails, said the report by the prison inspectorate. The fabric of the building is now so poor that a prisoner was able to remove his cell door. Drug use, debt, and prisoner frustration at the inability of staff to manage basic requests were some of the leading causes. But the lack of purposeful activity, with most inmates spending just 2.5 hours a day unlocked, compounded these issues. Self-harm was now among the highest in the UK, and prisoners were especially frustrated by an inability to use phones to contact their families. In the inspector's survey of prisoners, more than a quarter said that they currently felt unsafe, and 57% said they felt unsafe at some point in the jail. A staggering 47% of prisoners who responded to the survey said it was easy to get illicit drugs, and 41% had tested positive in random drug testing, which had only recommenced in August. Security was seriously compromised across the jail. More than a third of CCTV cameras were broken, and damage to the fabric of the building had resulted in one prisoner being able to remove his own cell door. Offensive graffiti, insufficient furniture, and, in some cases, damp and mould that was so bad that inspectors questioned if some cells were suitable for habitation, further added to the pervasive sense of neglect and dilapidation. Mr. Taylor said, "There was no denying the failings in leadership at this prison. Although a full complement of prison officers had been recruited, too many staff lacked competence and confidence. Not enough had been done by leaders to make sure that standards were enforced, or the prisoners' basic needs were met. The poor outcomes at Winchester represent systemic failings under the oversight of HMPPS. If the prison is to provide decent living conditions, improve safety and security, and operate effectively, it will require sustained support and investment." Lord Thompson, Minister for Prisons and Probation, said, "The dire situation at Winchester, highlighted by the Chief Inspector, is yet another symptom of the prison crisis we inherited. We are supporting the prison and its staff, who are working hard to deliver improvements in challenging circumstances. This action plan will ensure they have the support they need." Andrea Kuma, KC, Chief Executive of the Howard League for Penal Reform, said, "This is one of the worst reports on a prison that I've ever read, and the photographs of filthy toilets, broken windows, and mouldy walls tell their own story. A truly squalid, overcrowded Victorian jail, even to the point that some cells do not have electricity. Winchester received an awful inspection report in 2022, but things have gone from bad to worse. This raises important questions about the leadership of the prison, both locally and nationally, and about the government's plans to build more jails when the ones we have are failing so miserably." And this is accompanied by a photograph of the entrance to Her Majesty's prison at Winchester, which is all a rather sad case.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. If you have any problems with the recording, or if you know anyone else with sight impairment who might like to receive our free recordings, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. That number is also on the label attached to the memory stick. So now we will continue through death notices, Christian comment, letters to the editor, letters from Westminster, Belgarum, first person, and editorial comment, following with items of general news. So, here are the death notices. Adams, Rodney Frederick William Rod, at Winchester Hospice on the 2nd of January 2025, aged 75 years. Coleman, Josephine Betty Coleman, née Smith, on the 8th of November 2024. Fairweather, Barry Fairweather, on the 16th of December 2024, at home. Harper, Sheila Harper, at Winchester Hospice, on the 30th of December 2024, aged 82. Holden Brown, Pamela Georgina Ellen Holden Brown, née Marshall, 12th of January 2025, aged 90. Horton, Stuart Guy Horton, 24th of December 2024, aged 88. Hughes, William Kilpatrick Bill Hughes, at home, 7th of January 2025, aged 81. Leach, Derek Leach, 27th of December 24, aged 95. Parker, Mary Parker, at Winchester Hospice on the 21st of December 2024, aged 94. Rich, Judith Mary Rich, OBE, née Gardner, 29th of November 2024, aged 89. Rook, Christopher Rook, 25th of December 2024, aged 77. Smale, Rosemary Smale at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, 26th of December 2024, aged 87. White, Ivy White at University Hospital Southampton, 7th of January 2025, aged 95 years. And now, may we have Christian comment, please, from Andrew.
And this week's Christian comment is written by the Reverend Philip Crinks and is entitled Turning Water into Wine. What are we going to do with you? I think my mother used to ask me that now and again when I was a child. To be fair, it was only at understandably moments of exasperation when she was, I understand in retrospect, understandably struggling to think of anything that could be usefully be done with me. It is, though, a good question for us to ask ourselves. What do we want God to make of us, to do with us? What do we want to become? People sometimes feel there is not much point in asking what we want God to make of them. That's what could be a juster mistake. I'm just a youngster, or I'm just a old guy, or I'm just a mum, or just a dentist, or whatever. There is always a point in asking what you want your life to become. And to answer, you can best start by asking what is the need to be met. In many churches last week, we read the story of the wedding in Cana. Then there was certainly a need. Mary, the mother of Jesus, puts it bluntly to him. They have no wine. The guests already drunk the bar dry, and without wine, the bridegroom's family will suffer painful embarrassment. Joy will be absent, the party will be over, and where is more wine to be had? We each know of people and situations which are just like that today, where they have no wine, where there is shame, humiliation, suffering, where joy is absent, where the party seems to be over, and where no one can see where more wine is to be had. At Cana, standing ready were 6 stone water jars, each holding many gallons. And standing near those situations of need today are you and me. Fill the jars to the brim, said Jesus. To the wedding guests, skeptically watching, that is inexplicable. Jars filled with water, how will they help? How will they bring joy? But something extraordinary happened when the jars were filled in the presence of the Lord, by whom both the water and the jars were created, and by whom you and I were created. In a way beyond human comprehension, the water was made wine. The new creation was revealed. Poverty was turned to riches, sorrow into joy. And in the same way, we can be made new people, transformed by the Holy Spirit, enabled to meet those needs which seem so far beyond us, enabled to play our part in healing suffering and pain, enabled to bring joy and to share it in ourselves. Forget the jesters. Work out your real talents. Recognize them as gifts from God and put them to work where they are needed. Almighty God, in Christ you have made all things new, from the poverty of our nature by the riches of your grace. And in the renewal of our lives, make it known your heavenly glory. Through the same Jesus Christ, our Lord. Amen. And that again was contributed by the Reverend Phillips Crinks.
Thank you. There are 8 letters to the editor this week, beginning with one from Nikki.
This is a tester. It's headed When in Rome by Nick Ray. Jane Gregson, writing here recently on the astonishingly slow pace of railing replacements on the Upper High Street Bridge and St. Paul's, generously mentioned that Rome wasn't built in a day. Hampshire Chronicle Letters, December the 5th. But, by my estimates, the current rate of work is between 1.3 to 3 million times slower than it might have been in ancient times, despite modern tools being available in place of slave labour. Should the citizens of Winchester, forced for nearly 2 months on and off to detour, to take unpleasant or dangerous trips into town under the Stockbridge Road rail bridge or through the horrible and nearly as dangerous SWR railway car park, become stoics and mutter nil desterendum? Or is it time for the people of Belgarum to cry carpe diem and force some action and conclusion to these works? Here are some calculations. Maximum size of Roman Empire, 5 million square kilometres. Time to maximum size, 1,500 years. Average growth per year equals 3.333 square kilometres per year, or that's 3,333. Estimated area of fencing required, circa 300 to 500 square metres. If panels are 5 metres wide and 2 metres wide, and there are 15 on each side, estimated work duration to take 70 days. Taking higher estimated fence size, 500 metres squared, the bridge works are moving at a rate of 500/70 per day, or 7 square metres per day, or 2,500 square metres per year, or 0.0025 square kilometres per year. The Roman Empire therefore expanded at a rate of 3,333/0.0025 or 1.3 million times faster than this with modern tools, etc. He obviously hasn't got a lot to do. Sorry, Nick. Nick Ray, Fordington Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
And this is from Lorraine Estelle, Winchester District Green Party. Green Roots. In his article, Why the Greens Disappoint Me, Chronicle, October the 17th, George Hayter voiced his disappointment that the Green Party doesn't just focus on green issues, but include wider policies, such as how to raise money for the long-term solutions to the environmental crisis. The Green Party remains steadfast in its commitment to addressing global warming, particularly as 2024 was the first year the global average temperature exceeded 1.5 degrees centigrade above pre-industrial levels. The climate crisis demands urgent action, and the Green Party believes that lasting solutions require going beyond activism. The Green Party calls for more investment to improve our resilience and preparedness to be able to deal with more common and severe disasters like we've seen in Valencia and Los Angeles. To achieve real change, a political party must engage a wide audience and foster inclusivity to ensure the necessary changes are effective and fair. Addressing the climate emergency cannot happen in isolation. Other priorities, such as the economy and social justice, must be seen as complementary to environmental goals. While most people agree that we need to act to solve the climate crisis, the next question is usually, who will pay for it? To succeed in bringing about real change, the Green Party needs to address current issues such as the poor state of the economy, and we advocate nature-based solutions that reduce costs for the consumer while benefiting the environment without restoring nature. Climate actions will be inadequate, and the reverse is also true. At a local level, the Green Party believes in the principle of grassroots democracy. Unlike major parties that benefit from large donations, the Green Party relies heavily on crowdfunding and the contributions of its members. This approach creates public accountability and community-driven action. Green Party campaigners want councillors to actively engage with communities, collaborating with residents rather than making decisions on their behalf. For example, Our Green Meon Valley councillors recognise the vital role of our rural economy in providing local jobs and supporting the thriving businesses community. They have been assisting the local businesses and organisations in grant funding applications and continue to support a variety of other local businesses by linking them up with council initiatives. And that, as I said, was from Lorraine Estelle of the Winchester Green Party.
I think there must be something in the water, actually, because we've got lots of political letters this week. Revive the Leader. I'm delighted to see that MP Danny Chambers is backing the role of swimming in public health and supporting the NHS, as you report, Chronicle January 16th. Presumably, the swimming as medicine event you report is part of the excellent idea of social prescribing, where patients' lives and health can be improved by things other than medication. Separately, I love the mosaic you reported on a few weeks ago on Sporting Winchester, although the location in the station underpass leaves a little to be desired. There, the swimming is clearly the wild variety, with the swimmer amongst the kingfishers and the otters. On what might seem like another tangent, I note that we're approaching the 3-year anniversary of Winchester City Council's stated intent to dispose of the old leisure centre site to the University of Southampton, with precisely no progress. All these are actually connected. The campaign for Lido at River Park may have had to go on a back burner, but there is no reason it can't be revived. At the start of this Parliament, another new Lib Dem MP, James McCleary in Lewes, put forward an early day motion that this House celebrates the contribution to the UK's health and well-being and heritage made by Lidos. I wrote to Danny Chambers, asking that he should sign it, but got only an automated reply. He still hasn't signed it. If he were to do so, he would find it would get wide support in Winchester. The petition to WCC for Lido had more than 3,000 signatures. The points made in the petition about Lido's being beneficial for mental and physical health, as well as just being fun, are all the same as those in the parliamentary event that you report. And that's written by Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And this headed painful trip. I was walking back to my car in Winchester, on December the 18th, when a young child ran out of the M&S store and tripped me up, leaving me with an excruciatingly painful injury, a dislocated and fractured shoulder. A very kind passerby helped me up off the ground and seated me on the bench outside M&S. Unfortunately, because I was so traumatised and in so much pain, I didn't ask his name. After a while, I presume a staff member of M&S helped me into the store and found a chair for me. Again, and I didn't get his name, this person stayed with me for what seemed like hours until another member of the public offered to take me to the hospital. I was taken to Winchester A&E, where they tried to fix the dislocation without success. The staff were amazing. I was then sent to Basingstoke, where I had surgery the next day. Again, the staff were amazing, and I can only offer my thanks and praise to all the staff at both hospitals. I have been able to thank Amy, who took me to the hospital, for a very kind help. I tried phoning the Winchester store so that I could give my thanks to their staff member, but was told that they could not put me through to the store. I am unable to drive at the moment because of my injury, but will obviously get to the store when I can offer my thanks. I'm writing this for two reasons, mainly to give thanks to the very kind people who stopped to help me, and thanks to the staff at both hospitals. Also to say to parents, please keep your young children under control so that this doesn't happen to anyone else. And that from Brenda Penwarden in Eastleigh.
And this is from Councillor Chris Donnelly of Hampshire County Councillor for Andover West. Common ground. I was interested to read the letter from my TVBC colleague, Sally Yeldon. Letter, devolution, reorganisation will be intricate and drawn out, Hampshire Chronicle, January the 9th. Devolution and local government reorganisation has concerned all of us over Christmas, and we need to take great care to get this right for our residents. However, there are some statements in her letter which are incorrect and could potentially mislead, so I hope that I may be able to set the record straight, as this is the time of great uncertainty for residents and our staff, and we must stick to the facts of what we know. Although Hampshire has always wanted devolution, reorganisation is something which has been mandated by the government's white paper. It is important to stress that we have to decide between options given to us by the government, not how we would necessarily act. Personally, I support the two-tier system as it stands, but that is not an option. If we did not postpone elections, we would not be allowed any meaningful role in shaping the future of government in Hampshire. That was not the choice of any councillor in Hampshire. That was what the government decided. There are also questions around the point of the election where none of the candidates could actually present any manifesto to the voters, as the new system would transfer powers away from the county council and the new framework wasn't ready. The government required our decision on whether to sign up for all of this by January the 10th, a very short period of time. So there was never any question of it being able to be an election issue in May or changes resulting from the outcome. Even the opposition amendment at our full council meeting recognised that the May elections would be almost impossible, but members who wish to have an election on a point of principle can always resign and fight by election. Thanks to our prudent fiscal management, Hampshire has some of the strongest capital finances of any county council, which has allowed us to keep going a lot longer than some of our counterparts. Unless governments grasp this nettle, I fear that there will be no change to the pressures on the new unitary councils. In my view, this should be a priority over reorganisation. Members from all parties have worked very hard to find common ground and to do our best to safeguard as much localism in Hampshire as possible. There are going to be tough calls, and I will certainly be meeting my parish councils and constituents regularly to keep them updated and gauge their views. It would be helpful, though, if we could bypass the partisan politics of this crucial time for Hampshire and continue to work together. From what I have heard, most of us are in a complete agreement. And that, as I said, was from Councillor Chris Donnelly, Hampshire County Councillor for Andover West.
And continuing our theme, here is the letter from Winchester. Sorry, not Winchester, Westminster. Even more impressive. It's already been, and this is written obviously by Danny Chambers, it's already been a busy start to the year for me in Parliament and in Winchester. It was devastating to see the second critical incident declared this winter at Winchester Hospital. There simply aren't enough social care packages available from the Conservative-run County Council to allow patients ready to leave hospital to get the support they need at home and free up hospital beds for critical patients. It really comes down to the years of cuts and neglect to both our health and local services by the previous government. I have been campaigning for years about the challenges our hospitals are facing every winter, and my heart goes out to all the staff and patients who are having to deal with this crisis every year. It must also be tough for the friends and family of patients, worrying if their loved ones are able to get the treatment they need in a suitable hospital environment. I've been repeatedly raising this urgent issue directly with the Prime Minister and the Health Secretary since I was elected, and challenging the government to put health and social care at the top of their agenda. We simply can't afford for these crises to go on and on. The recent announcement that the new hospitals programme for Hampshire will be delayed by another decade is frankly outrageous. People voted to move on from the years of underinvestment from the previous Conservative government, and this Labour government is barely making a difference. We need to see our investment now in health services like our A&E and social care provision. It would be cheaper in the long run to get our public services working again now than it would be to delay further. Child protection has also been on the agenda in Parliament recently, and I took the opportunity to ask the government to promptly implement all of the recommendations of the independent inquiry into the matter, which for years has been ignored by the previous government. Rather than wasting time repeating the inquiry, I was pleased to secure a clear commitment from this government to start implementing the recommendations. And I'll be keeping an eye on their progress and doing what I can to ensure there is no further delay. I am delighted to say that I have been appointed to the committee to scrutinise the Tobacco and Vapes Bill. So much of Parliament's work happens away from the cameras and spectacle of the Commons in committees like this. So, as a strong advocate for investing in preventative healthcare, I'll be taking this opportunity to help ensure this bill is the best it can be and helps us to raise the next generation smoke-free. Back in Winchester, I visited the students at Winchester College for a Q&A. I was very impressed with how well informed and politically engaged they were. It was a pleasure to discuss a variety of subjects, including the Tobacco and Vapes Bill, and global issues like Ukraine, US politics, and climate change. And finally, it was great to work up a sweat at Winchester Boxing Club alongside Sport Winchester. Improving access to sport is hugely important for both physical and mental health, and I'll be doing what I can to work alongside Sport Winchester to help the clubs, the city and councils, and facility owners to work together and expand availability to more people in Winchester and the surrounding areas. My team and I are ready to help. So if there are any issues or concerns you have, get in touch at dannychambers.mp@parliament.uk.
Why must we build on green spaces? I can look out over South Winchester Golf Course from my home, clearly a well-used and beautiful recreational area. Why, then, should this become a housing estate? Or perhaps all local golf courses should be built on? Would anyone mind? Well, of course they would. I have read that in our district there are more than 1,000 empty homes. There are apparently brownfield sites for potentially 725 homes. Why should anyone want to desecrate countryside when alternatives exist? Don't the people of Winchester want to protect green spaces, or is it the money talks? We need more homes, that is clear. But of course we also need people to build them, and those skills seem to be in short supply. What a mess. And that from Tony Gaster, Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
Votes are crucial. May county elections are an essential element of democracy, regardless of which local party has a majority, Chronicle, January the 16th. I agree with Councillor Sally Yeldon that combining existing county and district councils would not only undermine residents' rights to vote during the May elections, but devolve a significant degree of influence by this government, where there is seemingly a tendency to interfere with county council's ability to serve residents. Larger strategic authorities sounds in itself deeply undemocratic. I cannot understand why Hampshire County Council is supporting such devolution. Common sense would certainly prevail should residents be given the opportunity to deliver their thoughts on the most serious anti-democratic initiative. The local government elections are crucial for freedom and democracy and must never be taken for granted. And that's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badgers Farm.
And this letter is from Dr. Andrew Thompson, and he's actually asking a question, and it's entitled Energy Exit Fee. I'm in the process of switching energy suppliers from E.ON to EDF. Although I've done this several times in the past, I've encountered difficulties concerning the exit fee on this occasion. In spite of a clear statement on E.ON's site that change is free of charge during the last 49 days of a contract, their customer advisor drew a distinction between tariffs and company and claimed the exit fee would not apply if changing tariff, but would apply if changing company. He said I could go on their variable tariff at the end of my contract and then switch companies without any exit charge. EDF denied this is necessary, but to be on the safe side, advised delay and transfer the day after the end of my contract with E.ON. While that course appears to provide an escape from exit fees, of course EDF and I are now left wondering who or what is right about the 49 days. The essential question is whether E.ON is right to draw this distinction between tariff and company. Is it lawful? And if it is, should not their site make this clear? I think it must be a number of points. One, wrong for E.ON to put misleading information on its site. Two, wrong to land customers with an unexpected fee if they're changing company. And three, wrong to run the risk of causing delay with the switch, which could, in an ever-changing market, mean a higher tariff with a new company. My intention in writing now is to draw to your attention an example of this sharp practice, and I shall be more than grateful for any advice or action your readers can find time to offer. And that's from Dr. Andrew Thompson, Stockbridge Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
And now we have editorial comment. What a mess over new hospital. When asked about the future of hospitals, people could be forgiven for retreating to a dark room and lying on the floor with a pillow over their heads. We had been promised a new £900 million hospital near Basingstoke and the downgrading of the A&E and maternity units at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. On Monday, the Labour government delayed the nationwide programme of hospital building, saying the previous government's plans were uncosted. It means that building work on the new hospital on the outskirts of Basingstoke, now estimated to cost up to £2 billion, will be put back by several years to start around 2037. It is yet another major project involving Winchester that seems cursed to never happen, along with Station Approach, Silver Hill and River Park Leisure Centre. Many people will be relieved that the A&E department and consultant-led maternity are staying for the foreseeable future, but the underlying problems remain. The NHS is underfunded compared to the healthcare in Germany and France because the British do not want to pay the tax that is necessary to keep it at the forefront of a first-class service. The new hospital would be a state-of-the-art and make much better use of the skilled staff in the NHS. Instead, we have a hospital, the RHCH, that will need major and costly upgrades and not enough skilled staff to do what local people want. It will muddle along, as it always does, but things could be so much better.
That concludes the letters to the Chronicle. If you want to contact the Chronicle, write to the editor, Hampshire Chronicle, 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. That's Winchester, SO238AL. Or you can email to newsdesk@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. All letters must include full names and addresses, although these details may be withheld from publication on request. So, there are two items in Belgarum, read by Nicky.
Belgarum.
Belgarum.
Oh, by Andrew. Sorry about that.
I could try a higher pitched voice.
No, I've gone very low today.
How low? Belgarum, an alternative look at the news. And the first of those two articles is those timeless two sounds. There are places in Winchester where you can slip or step back in time. Sometimes it's a place that has changed its appearance little in hundreds of years. The city has many. But there is a place where you can orally step back to the Middle Ages, and that's the Weirs next to Wharf Mill. On a winter's night it is dark with only dim light from one lamp. But that helps you listen to the water rushing under the mill and to the beautiful sound of the cathedral bells. The bell ringers regularly practice their peals on an evening, and the sound washes over the close. A man trudging home from work in 1400, 1700, 1900, as well as today, would only hear those two sounds, water and bells. The noises remove the sound of modern-day traffic on Chesil Street or Wharf Hill, and any noises from nearby flats or houses. Visually, the area is much the same. There's the river with its wooden fencing, the mill, the cathedral close wall, and in Victorian times, there were a number of waterside terraced houses that have long since been demolished. On nearby Wharf Hill, the Dog and Duck pub was knocked down in the 1930s and replaced by several trees. Then, out of the darkness came a jet from Southampton Airport, unusually flying north on takeoff over the city. Its screech did wipe out everything, but only for a minute or two, and then Belgarum was back in time travel with the water and the bells. Yeah, and it is a lovely spot there, isn't it? Mm. And the second article, the context of it is the photograph, really. There's a photograph here of some black rubbish bags and a few rather sad straggly branches of a Christmas tree, and it's entitled The Last Vestiges of Christmas. Out with the rubbish. There it is, the last of Christmas, part of a Christmas tree left outside a property in Bridge Street this week. The City Council has been collecting hundreds, if not thousands, of unwanted Yuletide trees this last week. They say online, simply leave your real tree without decorations, and if over 5 foot, cut into pieces, alongside your bin on Garden Waste Collection Day. And that's what somebody's done. Till next year.
And we move on to items of general news, beginning with Nikki.
Headed help for hospitals during emergency. A critical incident was declared by Hampshire Hospitals, led to business and charities providing vital support to NHS staff. The hospitals in Basingstoke, Winchester and Andover faced unprecedented demand due to winter viruses, leaving no capacity for new patients. The overload left healthcare professionals working long shifts, meaning it's difficult for staff to take proper breaks. Hampshire Hospitals charity quickly stepped in to assist. They contacted local businesses to provide food and drink for the staff rooms and rest areas. Mark Haney, head of charity at Hampshire Hospitals Charity, said, "As soon as the critical incident was called, the charity team got straight on the phone to everyone they knew to see if they could help keep our staff fed and watered as they worked longer shifts and took shorter breaks to ensure our parents were cared for. Our patients were cared for, sorry. The response was overwhelming, with donations of grab-and-go items from various local businesses. Staff expressed their gratitude with comments such as, 'This is amazing,' and 'This has made my day.' Support was greatly appreciated by hospital personnel. Businesses and organisations that contributed included Domino's Pizza, Chinham, Tesco, Chinham, Sainsbury's, Kempshott, and Starbucks, Kempshott, amongst others. Alex Whitfield, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospitals and Trustee of the charity, said, "The support from our communities during the past week has been very much appreciated. It made all the difference as we sought to treat and care for patients during a time of extraordinary demand."
Terrestrial confusion. Identifying the plough is my limit. You have to learn to avoid tripping over stuff while wandering round in the dark, looking upwards. I forgot my neighbour had brought back the heavy-duty wheelbarrow in the morning. Walking into its metal handles while seeking out conjunction really hurt. And the hardest challenge of all, how do you manage to say Uranus keeping a straight face? I have failed on all fronts. I have turned the gaze the other way. What if alien life was closing in on us? What would stand out for them? What would they find the most incomprehensible on Earth, apart from Donald Trump's hair and eating tofu? What would your top three madnesses, which Martians would find particularly nuts? Predictably, for me, number one would be the way in which women and girls are still treated so badly and unfairly. Across cultures, through time and in all societies, methods have usually been found to punish, control and despise the female sex. As the writer Jack Holland Riley observed, misogyny has never let progress stand in its way. Surely, one of the first things aliens would find insane would be the practice of FGM and girl-child marriages. Wouldn't they recall at this disturbing subculture of gang rape? From the Gisèle Pelicot case in France to the gross violations of teenage girls by vile predators across the UK towns and cities, wouldn't it be asked of all governments, media outlets and religious authorities, why didn't you move heaven and earth to stamp out these behaviours and ban all images of women that sexualise and degrades women? Why block a national inquiry? A close second would be medical research. Wouldn't aliens ask why government-funded scientific research and private drug companies were more focused on eradicating child cancers? Millions of pounds get spent researching a cure for adult obesity when there's already a solution. Eat less, move more. It's not rocket science. Finally, I can see an alien visitor shake their heads while saying, "Not on my planet, mate," when they spot Winchester City Council having approved a Starbucks and an electric vehicle charging super hub located in what used to be a field. Only here on Earth, you hope, can such irony coexist with such self-righteousness. Here, an endeavour aiming to address one of the fallouts from overconsumption and corporate capitalism will have a centrepiece that is at the epitome and a driver for those processes. Moreover, this is happening when the list of independent outlets closing in Winchester is spiking. In the Park, Eclectic Island, Hound, Ercian, where the support for local businesses that brings valued character and style to the city council centre. I know what I'd like to see sent into orbit. And that, how birds of prey lived off our scraps. Birds of prey in medieval Winchester relied heavily on scavenging human waste, new research suggests. The study, published in the Journal of Archaeological Science, examined the chemical signatures in the bones of more than 30 ancient birds, including red kites, buzzards and eagles. The research found that these birds, which lived near towns such as Winchester, Oxford and London, fed extensively on human scraps rather than hunting live prey. The research revealed that their reliance on human waste stretched back thousands of years. The researchers looked at bones from 11 red kites, 18 buzzards and 3 white-tailed eagles found at the archaeological sites across Britain. The absence of rabbits in the country before medieval times likely forced these birds to seek food in human settlements where waste was plentiful. Lead researcher at the University of Reading, Juliet Waterman, said historical records show medieval red kites stole food from markets and snatched morsels from people's hands. Some kites showed evidence of eating entirely human-sourced food, a diet very different from modern birds, which mainly hunt for rabbits and small mammals. The study found that medieval birds shared similar chemical signatures in their bones with humans living in the same areas. This suggests that they regularly scavenge from rubbish dumps and butchery waste. The red kites from urban sites like Winchester showed the strongest evidence of feeding on human waste, with chemical signatures indicating that they ate more processed food than their rural counterparts. The researchers believe that studying the scavenging habits of these ancient birds could prove beneficial in managing the growing raptor populations in modern urban areas, while also maintaining positive public attitudes towards these protected species. They note that today's red kites in urban areas like Reading display similar adaptable feeding habits to their medieval ancestors by taking advantage of food waste and scraps left in gardens. The study provides a new perspective on the historical relationship between birds of prey and human settlements, showing that these birds have been adaptable scavengers for thousands of years.
Four generations help Mary celebrate her 100th birthday. A Sutton Scotney great-grandmother has celebrated her 100th birthday surrounded by friends and family. Mary Smart of Grattan Close, who reached the momentous milestone on January the 13th, rang in her centenary last Saturday at the Victoria Hall. Mary, the eldest in a 9-strong brood, herself had 6 children. Her daughter Judith said, "Then we've given her 12 grandchildren, and she's got 20 great-grandchildren, and we're all here. There's 4 generations." Mary said, "I've just taken life as it comes, you know what I mean? And I won't give in. Be polite and nice to people," is her advice to those looking to emulate her longevity. Asked whether it's the social side of things that keeps her going, Mary said, "Absolutely. I've got a wonderful family, and I go to the hairdressers every week. One of my daughters takes me in. And yes, I try to keep young. I am one of a family of 9. I never did cause trouble. I've done my best. I spent 5 years in the land army, and I learned to drive a tractor, and twice a week we would help look after the pigs." And she added, "I didn't expect all this, but it is lovely, and I do appreciate it." And Mary, there's a photograph here with Mary celebrating her 100th, but she's actually got by her side her sister and her brother David. So, and they're all looking in fine fettle.
Call goes out for community awards nominations. Nominations are open for the Mayor of Winchester's Community Awards. The annual awards aim to recognise and celebrate individuals and organisations in the Winchester district who have gone above and beyond the call of duty to help others. The deadline for nominations is Sunday, February the 16th, with the award ceremony scheduled for Thursday, March the 13th. The Mayor, Councillor Russell Gordon-Smith, said, "These awards are an opportunity for us to recognise the efforts by individuals and organisations. Every day across our district, people work tirelessly for the good of others and for their local communities, and many of these individuals are unsung heroes. As Mayor, I have witnessed the huge impact of this service, including the district's many volunteers and those who help our multitude of charities. Without them, life for many would become very much harder, if not impossible. My community awards are an opportunity to publicly recognise those who have made a difference to other people. I would encourage everyone to please take the time to nominate anyone who deserves this thank you. To nominate a person or organisation, complete the online form at winchester.citizenspace.com/communications/ Oh dear. Mayor dash of dash Winchester dash community dash awards dash 2025. I could repeat that, but I think you could probably try and listen to it again. It'd be easier.
Country pub named the best in the county. A Hampshire country pub has been voted the county's best boozer by the Daily Telegraph. The Wanston Arms near Winchester, which claims it's the best little pub in Hampshire above its entrance, is exactly that, according to the London Broadsheet, which recently ran an article entitled "The Best Pub in Every English County." The pub won Camera's Pub of the Year award in 2019. The Chronicle spoke to landlord Matt Todd, who will celebrate his 10th year in charge of the pub in April. He said, "That Telegraph article, when I read it, I was like, wow, it was really amazing on a dreary January week." Matt was pleasantly surprised to find the Wanston Arms on the list, not least because of stellar company it was in. "The honest truth of it is, I was travelling last week and somebody sent the article to me," he said. "The first pub that came up was the Black Bull. I was born in Cumbria and the Black Bull is legendary Lakeland pub," he added. "It's a list of very pubby pubs. It's those kind of places that weren't created for their high-end food. They're places where people come to interact and do pub things. It epitomises the cosy, heritage-based venue that delivers on what the traditional pub feeling was, is and continues to be in these places, whereas others are changing their behaviour and adapting to more modern tastes." Matt was also happy with what he described as the Telegraph's canny move to help pubs get through the often difficult months after the festive season, when football can ebb. He said, "At a time when the hospitality trade is quite quiet, I think it was really respectful, clever way of the Telegraph to put the news article out, just to bring it up a bit. After it came out, we had one of our busiest Monday nights, so there you go, that's the answer to that one." Later on, the pub filled up with musicians as punters poured in for the Wanston Arms Acoustic Diva night, which saw 25 people join to play their instruments through the evening. Other nights to look out for are Tuesdays, when a pop-up van serves fish and chips, and Fridays, when cooks from Winchester restaurant The Light of Bengal come along to serve up some authentic curry dishes. So there you go. Go off to the Wanston Arms.
And building on the previous article I read out, which is four generations joining a birthday celebration, this article has five generations join birthday celebrations for Joyce, aged 101. A 101-year-old woman brought five generations of her family together for a special gathering. Joyce Ward welcomed daughter Heather, 77, granddaughter Hilary Broomfield, 58, great-granddaughter Izzy, 26, and great-great-granddaughter Aurora, who's 5 months, at her home in Colton Cares, St. Catherine's View in Stanmore, Winchester. The all-female family get-together was made possible by Heather travelling from her home in Lanzarote, and Izzy and Aurora making the trip from Mitcham in Surrey. Hilary said, "We are so lucky to have my grandmother with us at the grand old age of 101, and for her to be able to enjoy meeting Aurora, the next generation of our family." The five generations were able to come together, and the moment was captured forever thanks to Colton Care. Laura Sheldrake, companionship team leader at St. Catherine's View, said, "Hilary is the most local and visits Joyce a few times a week, keeping her and all of us up to date on what's happening with the family. We were thrilled when we heard the news of Aurora's birth last summer. While Izzy has since brought her new baby from their home in Surrey to visit Joyce a few times, the whole family get-together was the first time that Heather had been able to travel from Lanzarote since Aurora was born. We've made sure that Joyce has a photo of the five generations with her new great-great-granddaughter, to see and to keep in her room. She was so happy when she saw the picture of the family all together in the same place at the same time, and kept looking at it and reading the text we put on it over and over. Joyce told us she thought Aurora was beautiful, and that she was so pleased and lucky to have her here. Laura added, "This is the first time we have ever had five generations of the same family together at St. Catherine's View. It's very rare, I'm sure, and so special that it is five female generations. It was a privilege to help arrange this and take a photo for them, so they will have this memory to last a lifetime." In 2023, Joyce, who is a wheelchair user, embarked on a bucket list of 10 adventures leading up to her 100th birthday in May of that year, and did that with help from Laura and colleagues from St. Catherine's View. And there are a couple of photographs here accompanying the article and showing all of the five generations. Very impressive.
Launch of preparation for Riot's anniversary. A reception was held at the Mayor's official residence in Winchester to mark the start of the run-up to the bicentenary commemoration of the Captain Swing riots. Dignitaries, historians, councillors, poets and more attended the event at Abbey House in Winchester on Friday, January the 17th. Various people and groups, all with an interest in the history of the riots, spoke, hoping to spark interest and foster a community of like-minded people. The bicentenary anniversary will take place in 2030, and it is hoped that there will be events, exhibitions and lectures throughout the year. Leading the group is Edward Fennell, who is acting as project coordinator on behalf of the English Project. He said, "The Swing Project was conceived in the autumn of 2022, so it has taken almost 2.5 years to get to this point. Over this time, a lot of work has been put in by a number of historians and creatives. We are grateful to them for their contributions. But with this evening's event, I feel we really have liftoff to spread our wings across Winchester and the county, and also to start focusing on what we hope will be a spectacular event in terms of exhibition and performances in the bicentenary year of 2030. The riots began in 1830, when Hampshire was engulfed by a wave of rural protest against labour displacing threshing machines and low pay. Nearly 2,000 protesters were brought on trial for their part, and 252 were sentenced to death, with two, Henry Cook and Joseph Thomas Cooper, hanged in Winchester on January the 15th, 1831. Mr. Fennell added, "The Swing story is, of course, historically very significant, but it is more that than that. Perhaps it could be best described as a modern parable of how society deals with transformational change, how the powerful addresses the powerless, and how the intervention of violence can disrupt dialogue over unions." He said that the essence of the story was comparable to riots that happened today, such as the UK riots in 2024. Other people to speak at Friday's event included Professor Bill Lucas, Chair of Trustees from English Project, Sophie Blakeway from Village Perspective, author Jill Chambers, Alan Lovell from Hampshire Cultural Trust, local historian Barry Sherlock and Professor Chris Mulvey, also from the English Project, and Russell Gordon Smith, the Mayor of Winchester. Poet Georgia Hilton gave a reading of one of her many poems inspired by the Swing riots, and Liz Weston from Community Theatre spoke about one of the many performances also inspired by them. The evening also saw a website launched, and there's a photograph of all the above mentioned in a very beautiful room with big paintings and pale yellow walls.
Criminals foiled as illegal e-bikes end up in the crusher. More than 100 vehicles have been crushed by police in Hampshire in the past year as part of a targeted campaign. The vehicles were seized as part of Operation Crush, which aims to combat the illegal use of privately owned powered two-wheeled vehicles such as e-scooters and off-road electric motorcycles. There has been a rise in the number of these vehicles being used for serious crimes, while also putting the riders of these vehicles and other road users at risk of serious injury. This prompted Hampshire Police and the Crime Commissioner Donna Jones to sign a contract to enable the force to enhance the powers of its officers by using legislation to give them the option to destroy any e-scooter or e-motorcycle used in crime. More than 50 seized by the operation so far were e-scooters, while 26 electric bikes have also been seized after they were illegally modified, with some owners taking them on major routes, including the M3. Sergeant James Dobson of Rhodes Policing Unit said, "By using these enhanced powers to destroy these vehicles after seizing them, we are stopping these criminals from going straight back out and committing same offences multiple times. It is a significant new weapon in our armoury to help us combat the rise in these vehicles being used in criminality and antisocial behaviour." The campaign was launched to crack down on the illegal use of these vehicles, which had become increasingly popular with those committing a variety of different crimes, including those involved in drugs gangs. "A particular focus for our officers is the use of e-motorbikes and off-road scramblers, which are often being used for nothing other than dangerous road use, antisocial behaviour and serious criminality. They are almost always owned by the people riding them, and when we seize and destroy them, they are £1,000 worse off. This tougher stance is helping us to keep our roads safer, as the vehicles are often used dangerously, potentially putting lives at risk." Ms. Jones said, "Since being elected the police commissioner in 2021, the public have consistently told me they want the police to do more to crack down on e-scooters. Too often we see people on privately owned e-scooters riding dangerously on roads and pavements, breaking the law. I have seen a number of dangerous collisions, particularly on pavements, which have resulted in people suffering significant injuries, some of them life-changing. While many people use e-scooters in environmentally friendly travel, residents and road users have a right to be concerned about the dangers of privately owned e-scooters, which are illegal to ride on the road and are often being used to commit crime. My message is absolutely clear. If you choose to operate an e-scooter illegally, you will face the consequences, and to the criminals and drug gangs using them, they will be seized and destroyed. The vehicles are being crushed at Silver Lake Automotive Recycling in Botley Road, Shedfield."
And this is an article for the mathematicians amongst you out there. "Winchester men have biggest feet in England. Men in Winchester have the largest feet in England, according to a new study. The analysis of more than 500,000 shoe zone sales found that nearly half of the men in Winchester wear shoes that are larger than the average size. The data, which studied sales from 68 cities, also found that nearly one in six men in Manchester wear the largest shoe size, 12 to 13. The cities with men who also wore the largest shoe size were Southend-on-Sea and Lincoln, with one in seven and nearly one in seven, respectively. In contrast, Manchester had nearly a quarter of its men wearing the smaller size, six or seven. London also had many men with smaller feet, with a quarter wearing a size on the lower end of the scale. Women in England were found to have the largest feet in the United Kingdom, with cities in England taking all top 10 spots. A spokesman for Shoe Zone said, "In order to find where in the UK has the biggest and smallest feet, we analysed data from over 500,000 shoe sales across 68 British cities. And no matter how old you are, everyone should ensure their feet are measured accurately so that we're wearing the correct size to support their feet."
Hedging link project halfway. Okay, start again. Hedging link project halfway. A project aiming to link two national parks in Hampshire by planting a hedge has celebrated a major milestone. Country charity CPRE Hampshire has been creating a nature recovery corridor to link the South Downs National Park and the New Forest National Park. Last Friday, the charity celebrated reaching the halfway point of the three-year project, which aims to plant 15 kilometres of greenery and create a Hampshire hedge. Local MPs, county and district councillors, key partners and funders marked the occasions at an event in the Hillier Gardens Arboretum, where they planted hedgerow whips. The event was overseen by Hampshire Hedge CPR members, Ellie Banks, who started the project, and Yolande said, "We are celebrating the halfway point of our planting today, so we've reached 7.5 kilometres out of our 15-kilometre target over the 3 years. This is the second year of the project. It's a great celebration to get all our different stakeholders together. So funders, landowners, teachers, councillors, and everyone who has been involved in the project has come along to celebrate this great achievement with us. Everyone has been so invested, and it's such an important project, having lost half of our hedgerows in the last 80 years. And it is vital that we get more hedgerows across the UK and get hedgerows into better management, because they are such a vital habitat for different wildlife." Yolande said that the project will conclude in 2026, with CPRE having one more winter to continue planting. The next steps will include planting the final 2.5 kilometres and continuing hedge laying courses to train people in how to do it. Yolande added, "A big issue with hedgerow management is that there are not enough people trained in hedge laying. Every hedge should be laid in its life. That's just a vital part of hedgerow management. So we feel very strongly that more young people need to be inspired to take in the skill of hedge laying, which will increase the amount of people working in that industry and hopefully get the ball rolling with more hedge laying happening across the UK." Fran Clifton, head gardener at Hillier Gardens, said, "Hillier Gardens, being a charity ourselves, we know how important it is to join up with others. Joining forces means a project can have bigger exposure, bigger coverage, but it also means we can achieve the bigger picture. And CPRE is just a fantastic charity to be involved with. It is very well organised by Ellie and Yolande, and we have their volunteers join our volunteers, and I think the whole thing become a very good communal effort of making this hedge work."
Students' artwork entered into national event. Art students from Peter Simmons College in Winchester were celebrated for their talent at a special ceremony. Students whose artwork was selected by the Arts Society Winchester were honoured on the day. The Arts Society Winchester entered these artworks into a prestigious national The Arts Society student competition, with the results expected soon. Students Megan Wright, Amy Crocker, Ruth Barber, Amelie Lawrence and Arion Tanganan, who was represented by his mother, had their work showcased. During the ceremony, David Lovegrove, project leader, member of the Winchester Art Society, praised Anton Pigott, head of art at Peter Simmons, and his colleagues for their role in inspiring the young artists. Mr. Lovegrove referenced Tony Sexton, the society member now in his 90s, whose lifelong passion for art was also sparked by Peter Simmons' art teacher back in 1943, when the school was still a grammar institution. Three places have now been shortlisted to go forward to a public vote in the national competition.
Show goes on, thanks to a donation of £2,200. A community theatre group has welcomed donations, which has helped it to put on its next show. The Alresford Community Theatre Society, ACTS, has received a £2,200 donation from the Alresford Pigs Association, allowing the group to put on its next performance, The Sound of Music. A cheque for the amount was presented by the pigs to ACTS on Friday, January the 17th, outside the Alsford Community Centre. Manny Zornoza, chair pig of the Alsford Pigs, said, "Our motto is local people supporting local people." ACTS is obviously a local community group that has struggled a bit post-COVID, so we thought we'd like to help the group get back on its feet. Any local organisation which involves a lot of local people or local individuals, we're keen to support. We're now in our 51st year, the Alsford Pigs, and we're always looking for willing volunteers to join us and help out. Minna Bruce from ACTS said, "The choice was to do something big, so the Sound of Music, which costs £3,000 just to get the licence. And then there's the rental of Perrins as well. So we were thinking, can we, can't we? And the pigs came up trumps. It wouldn't have happened if we hadn't had the support from these people. Giving the young people the opportunity to perform and grow in self-confidence, they absolutely transform during the rehearsals and show week. It gives them a life skill, a very vital life skill. We're absolutely thrilled with our cast. We've got a very good cast. So, although it's called amateur dramatics, some of the talent is really professional. The community aspect is vital, and we're bringing this iconic musical to our hometown, and that is a huge honour to be able to do it. Alongside the Pigs, ACTS has also seen support this year from the new Alsford Town Council, Lady Ashburton, Moomix, Alfred Holmes, Winchester Blinds and Shutters, and McKinney's Meats, among others. ACTS will be performing The Sound of Music from February the 20th to February the 22nd in Perrins School Hall, and tickets are currently available for purchase.
And that's all we have for you today. Thanks to the editors and all the other volunteers who prepare and dispatch our free recordings to you. Please put the memory stick in the plastic wallet when you've finished with it and post it back to the Chronicle. And thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And goodbye from me, Noel Thorpe Tracy. I hope you stay safe and warm in the cold winter weather. Goodbye, and thanks for listening.